Welcome to this week's edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. January brought a new governor and a new General Assembly to Dover, and with them, storylines of change on multiple fronts. What did we see in the first few weeks of the Meyer administration and the 152nd General Assembly session? Delaware Public Media political reporter Sarah Petrowich has been following it all at Legislative Hall. And as lawmakers take a break for budget hearings this month, she joined me earlier this week to dive into a fairly eventful start to the year. So let's start with the new governor, Matt Meyer. He campaigned largely as an outsider, and I think a lot of people were interested to see how that would translate to his initial actions once in office last week. I guess it's fair to say we saw a willingness to go toe-to-toe with the legislature. The flashpoint was nominees for the Diamond State Port Corporation oversees the Port of Wilmington. Former Governor Bethany Hallwall made five nominations during her brief two-week tenure in office. Meyer asked the state Senate to withdraw them. The Senate balked, setting up this big showdown. Can you summarize what happened during that showdown last week? What was going on, and where do we stand?
Yes, as you pointed out, Hallwall made legal but perhaps questionable moves to appoint five members to the Diamond State Port Corporation board, seemingly the day before Meyer's inauguration. The day he was sworn in, he sent a letter asking the Senate to withdraw those nominations, noting he might even appoint some of the same people, but wanted to do it on his own accord. And then Senate President Pro Tempore Dave Sekola sent a letter back saying it was within Meyer's right to make his own nominations, but that Senate Democratic leadership feels Hallwall's nominations are qualified. So then, about a week later, the Senate Executive Committee posted its agenda with just under 24-hour notice, and four of Hallwall's nominations were on the slate. We now know the fifth nominee, a former chair of the Delaware Board of Pilot Commissioners, withdrew his name from consideration. Meyer sent another letter to the Senate, essentially saying he would pursue legal action if the Executive Committee went through with the confirmations. And Sekola opened the hearing saying he feels the Senate is legally in the right and proceeded. So all four nominations have been confirmed by the committee, but they still need full Senate approval. And both the entire General Assembly and Meyer have asked the Delaware Supreme Court for if Meyer was within his right to withdraw the nominations. And then additionally, Meyer is asking if he's able to withhold commissions from the appointments, which is the official document that would make them a member of the board. So lots going on.
So before we delve a little bit more into that, let's talk a little bit about just kind of the background with this and the port, because this is kind of playing out as the port is at kind of a critical moment, specifically with its planned expansion, creating a new facility upriver from the current port at the old DuPont-Camore site in Edgemoor. Can you tell us a little bit about where this port expansion stands right now and why it's so significant and why it's kind of a flashpoint for all this controversy?
Yeah, most people may not have even heard of the Diamond State Port Corporation Board prior to this debacle. It's essentially the public body that governs the Port of Wilmington and is also in charge of the long-awaited container terminal at Edgemoor, as you referred to. That project is a big deal because it's expected to quadruple the port's capacity for container cargo and become one of Delaware's largest employment centers, bring in a ton of tax revenue as well. But that project is facing some legal permitting challenges, and there's been this looming question of will the Meyer administration finally be the one to get it done? But Senate Majority Leader Brian Townsend implied during the confirmation hearings that Meyer's administration seems to want to slow walk the project, although Meyer's new Secretary of State has publicly spoken in favor for the Edgemoor project. So if those permits get approved, it will be worth following how the Meyer administration proceeds.
And just real quick, the permit approval piece of this had to do with dredging to be done by the Army Corps of Engineers to create a channel to what would be this new port in the Edgemoor area. And that is something that has also been kind of challenged by ports upriver, including Philadelphia. So there's a lot of kind of like just, you know, I guess nuance going on here in terms of what other ports in the region feel and the legal piece with the Army Corps. It's been an idea that's been out there for a while and just has been kind of. It's funny, they talk about Meyer slow walking it. It's honestly kind of been slowly walking itself at
right,
this point.
Right.
But it does feel like there's a lot of urgency from a lot of people to try to get this project going because of the jobs that it would bring into the state and obviously boost the port.
Right. And Delaware is not even directly involved in that lawsuit. It really is the Army Corps, and it was a federal judge in Pennsylvania. And yes, it's been implied that New York wouldn't be happy about this port and Pennsylvania wouldn't be happy about this port because it's really going to be revolutionary and could be better than some of those ports and really good for Delaware, so not as good for other states. So there's a question of how much, you know, what happened with the legal permitting process? Are people just kind of upset at Delaware? There's a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, obviously the port being a little bit lower in the river would actually be a little bit easier for ships to get there without having to go all the way upriver. A whole lot going on there, but certainly some background that people should know that this is something that's been kind of brewing for a while and involves more than just Delaware. Let's go back to the nominees. And while it seems there's little objection to most of these nominees, Meyer even said, hey, I might appoint some of the same people anyway. One name seems to be at the center of all this, and that is Jeff Bullock, the former longtime Secretary of State of Delaware, who had been in that role and serving as part of that role as Port Board President. What did he have to say at the hearings, and what was being kind of said about him during last week's confirmation hearings?
Yes, backtracking just a little bit really quickly, there is this invisible force of, you know, Meyer versus Hall Long. There's this tumultuous relationship between them, and it's informed by their contentious gubernatorial primary run, right? And that was mentioned in the confirmation hearings. Senator Townsend asked some of the nominees, do you think that informed this at all? Like Meyer asking you to withdraw, et cetera. So that is always at play as well.
Sure.
But former Secretary of State Jeff Bullock has been chair of the board for a long time and served as Secretary of State for over 15 years. And yes, there is definitely some tension between him and the Meyer administration. He was the only one of the five nominees who, according to their testimony, was not approached by the Meyer administration to rejoin the board. But Bullock says they expect the proper permits for the project to come through very soon. And if they do, the Edgemoor project already has a contractor and is ready to start construction. He also said he would never publicly criticize an administration. That's a quote from him. But that if the Meyer administration wants to get Edgemoor done, they should get it done and not just said that they want to get it done. So there's definitely some further disagreement going on behind the scenes. I asked Meyer's Deputy Chief of Staff, Nick Merlino, why there is so much controversy centered around Bullock, but he ultimately evaded that question.
So what is next at this point? Obviously, we talked a little bit about the Supreme Court advisory opinions that both sides have asked for. And as we wait for that and we're in this kind of limbo, is there a sense that this is kind of setting a combative tone for this legislative session?
Yeah, so right now those appointments sit in limbo as both Meyer and the General Assembly await an opinion from the state Supreme Court, which is expected to take around a month. That's kind of what the Senate was assuming. We do not have a set timeline, and they will likely combine that opinion, so it should be issued as one. But absolutely, this sets a combative tone. There was already tension as Meyer was entering office. Bethany Hall Long was definitely the favorite by the majority of legislatures. She's a former member of the House and the Senate, also the former lieutenant governor who presided over the Senate. So she had great legislative connections. Meyer has, you know, as we've said, been seen as an outsider. And there was talks of him trying to lean on Lieutenant Governor Kyle Evans Gaymore to bridge that gap. We haven't really necessarily seen that yet, but we're in very preliminary stages. So there definitely seems to be frustration already between Meyer and the legislature. But there is some stuff that he's working on that the legislature is in support of, and we just haven't gotten to see that play out yet. So it's still early. There's still time.
So we will keep an eye on both the advisory opinions to see what happens with these port nominees and ultimately the port itself. And, of course, where things head with the Meyer and General Assembly relationship. At least we could say this much about their relationship. Meyer's cabinet nominees were all confirmed as it's anticipated. No real drama there. But we did get to hear for the first time from the new Education Secretary, Cynthia Martin, who comes from outside Delaware, another outside influence being brought in by the Meyer administration. What did we learn from the former U.S. Department of Education Deputy Secretary during her confirmation hearings?
Yeah, initially when she was first announced to be the nominee, I talked to Democratic leadership as well as Republican leadership, and there seemed to be a pretty good consensus around her that they were excited to see what she had to say. There was just some concerns that being an outsider and coming from such a large state, but then we found through the confirmation hearings that she has over 15 years of classroom teaching experience in the San Diego Unified School District and then worked her way up to vice principal, principal, and then superintendent, and then ultimately U.S. Deputy Secretary of Education under Biden. So it seems, though, her teaching experience is going very favorably with members of the General Assembly. They like that she's a public school teacher. And additionally, she has real hands-on experience implementing an equitable education formula, which is really the most crucial piece here because that is what Delaware is working on right now, how to better fund classrooms in an equitable manner. And so she really stressed that point. She had over 2 hours worth of questioning. She handled them all greatly. She was unanimously confirmed by the executive committee and then confirmed by the Senate. So I think there's a lot of hope around her. Even though she comes from a large state and is an outsider, she's got a lot of professional experience that it sounds like everyone hopes will translate properly to Delaware.
And specifically when you're talking about the education funding piece of this, her experience in California as a superintendent in San Diego was specifically with enacting a new funding formula there, and her efforts were rated very well in terms of comparing it to other places in California that were implementing the same thing.
Yes, there were actual studies done on her. Her team was followed for her school district specifically, and their school district was seen as a success story. So even where some maybe didn't implement the equitable funding formula as well, Cindy Martin, I mean, has proven experience as doing it properly. So that's definitely a green flag.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because as we know, Governor Meyer has kind of his ideas about education funding. We know there's a legislative body that's working on this, and how they come together is certainly one of the things we'll be watching over the course of the next year plus. Governor Meyer was also making a lot of other news in the first few weeks, and mainly through a series of executive orders on topics that he had campaigned on. Tell us a little bit about some of these executive orders and kind of how he's checking some boxes of things he talked about during the campaign.
Exactly what you just said. He really is walking the walk so far in terms of taking action on his key campaign promises. So one of the executive orders, which he signed just minutes after his inauguration, was to expand career pathways within the public education system. Another to improve government transparency, which was very large for him, especially with his opponent Ha Long and her campaign finance issues. Another to strengthen food security networks, and another to develop a one-stop shop for workforce and affordable housing efforts. So as we've talked about, Meyer time is definitely in full swing. But this could be an indicator of how he plans to run his administration. We had conversations about, does Meyer plan to be more reactive or proactive with the legislature in trying to get his agenda accomplished? And with the slew of executive orders, it kind of does bring into question, will Meyer really be taking things into his own hands largely moving forward, rather than working with the legislature as much to get things passed legislatively? For example, Senator Darius Brown did pass similar legislation last year about expanding food security, specifically in Wilmington, New Castle County, but he's working across the state. And there hasn't really been an indicator of if the two have discussed those efforts in relation to Meyer's executive order. So that's just one example. But it does kind of question, again, how is his administration setting himself up to accomplish his agenda?
And I think it is important to say, too, that there's only so much executive orders can do. Ultimately, especially when it comes to just funding anything, you need lawmakers to sign on. Like, before, I think a perfect example is, you know, Governor Carney and his budget smoothing. When he couldn't get the legislature behind it, did do it by executive order. And for the most part, lawmakers bought into that process. But it was always a bit of a slog to get the lawmakers to agree to kind of codify that or make it a constitutional amendment. So there's only so much those executive orders can do. And I guess that's something to keep an eye on as well, is like, okay, he's doing these things by executive order, but how much legs do they have without lawmakers kind of backing it up?
A great point. And we're not even a month in, you know, so there's still plenty of time to see.
So on the legislative side, kind of a quiet first couple of weeks, not a lot of action. Perhaps the most notable bill was one that is returning to legislative hall. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so medical aid in dying is back. It's been reintroduced in the legislature for over a decade at this point, and it actually made it incredibly far, if not passing completely, last session. That was championed by Representative Paul Baumbach. And so it got through the House. It went to the Senate. It failed on its first attempt with some Democrats defecting. It came back. It finally made it. And at that time, Governor Carney was not committed to signing. We found out a couple months later he officially vetoed that bill. And so it is now back in the legislature. It is taken over by State Representative Eric Morrison. He is confident that they have the votes in both chambers. Governor Matt Meyer has already committed to signing it. So it seems as though it is going to get through this time. But as we've seen before, you never know what's going to happen.
So it's probably something we'll see, perhaps try to move really quickly once we get back from the JFC budget hearings in March.
Yes, it has already made it through its House committee hearing. It needs to go to the House floor. But it is worth noting that we have yet to fill the two vacant seats in the state Senate that are going to special election, and those votes will be necessary to get it through. That special election is happening February 15th, so in theory it will happen, and those members will be in place before the Senate votes on this bill. So that should be sorted out. But we don't know whether they're Democrats or Republicans if they will be in support of this bill. So that's still something important to keep in mind, because they really can't even afford to lose one vote.
Anything else jump out from the first couple of weeks of the legislative session?
Yeah, it's been a little bit slow, but one of the biggest ones definitely was a bill to establish a cabinet-level veterans office. There are two veterans offices, or there's a commission and an office that are within the Department of State, but the Department of State oversees 17 different offices. They've got a lot going on. So the idea is to get some specific staffing and funding for a cabinet-level veterans position that had unanimous support in committee. It also passed last year in committee, but it stalled because of the fiscal note, and we're seeing that again this year. It's going to cost about $800,000 the first year, $900,000 the second year. That's obviously expected to grow. It is now heading to the House Appropriations Committee, where they will figure out that fiscal note, and we'll see if it's included in these budget hearings coming up. But as a lot of veterans and the sponsor of the bill pointed out, this is really, it's around $9.80 per veteran to fund. So, you know, price-wise versus what you're getting, you know, I mean, it seems kind of like maybe a large fiscal note, but in terms of providing for the veterans of Delaware, some could argue it's incredibly affordable.
So. And it is a big constituency in the state.
Yes, and it's also been very contentious in the past that veterans have not been getting the support that they have been promised. Healthcare is a huge issue for veterans, so this is definitely, it seems as though everybody, the consensus is it is a step in the right direction, and the hope is that this is the year that it finally gets done.
Anything else you're keeping an eye on?
Other than that, there's definitely House Bill 6 has made it past the House, which is an effort to give subpoena power to the state auditor, which is a power that several other offices have without having to go through the court first. The auditor, actually, Auditor York, said that this was a bill that she proposed. I asked her if it was in reference specifically to the University of Delaware. There has been some controversy that happened after an audit came out on employees employed dually within state organizations, and the University of Delaware has long held that that does not apply to them and do not disclose those records to the auditor. She said that she's actually been working on this bill before that audit even came out, but there is another piece of legislation coming down the pike that will require employees that are dually employed by the state to report, and they've even added an amendment that specifically clarifies language on which public education institutions are required in that. So it seems like there's definitely some targeting to University of Delaware, whether, you know, we're outright saying it or not. But yes, definitely some power coming to the auditor's office to make their job a little bit smoother as far as legal proceedings, subpoenas, et cetera.
There was also some interesting resolutions brought up in the House Rules Committee, and that kind of flew under the radar a little bit. So can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of what's going on there?
Yeah, pretty fascinating. So State Representative Sean Lynn, he has worked for it's over a decade on repealing the death penalty in Delaware. Now, the death penalty is not currently enforceable in Delaware because of rulings, but it is still sitting in the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And so there was an effort finally to repeal that, but now Sean Lynn has been working on removing the death penalty entirely, outlawing it for the future. And so that was a point of contention for him last year, because in this hearing that just happened in House Rules, he said that he was told by former Speaker Valerie Longhurst that his legislation, if it had his name on it, would not be heard, period. And so he introduced two bills during this committee hearing. The first requires that the clerk accept legislation in the pre-file. He didn't imply that the clerk has ever rejected legislation, but was essentially implying that maybe had been told in the past not to accept bills in the pre-file. And so that actually did pass unanimously. And this committee is also made up of House leadership. So that was in full support. His second one, though, allows a representative to place any bill on the agenda. Now, that is historically a power given to the Speaker of the House. Mm-hmm. And the majority of leadership contended that that is a power that they want to continue giving the Speaker of the House. And current Speaker of the House, Melissa Minor Brown, did say that she apologized for what Lynn has experienced in the past, but she does not plan to continue that. And Lynn did make it clear that this is something he specifically experienced with the former Speaker. And so that bill ultimately stalled, so that did not go through. So it is still up to the Speaker to place bills on the agenda. But the final one that is pretty interesting, maybe a little bit more inside baseball, is just simply that the legislature does have the power to impeach, but it has been recently found out that there is not a mechanism in place to impeach if that were to go through. And so Lynn introduced this bill to find a way to work that into the rules. There's really some stuff just going on behind the scenes, essentially, that the House and the Senate need to adopt these rules. So that bill was ultimately tabled so leadership could talk to the Senate to make sure that they could concurrently pass that. So a couple of interesting things going on. But really, it sounds like there's some grudges, some vendettas that came from last legislative session. But it looks like leadership is really trying to work on making sure that they have a clean slate going forward.
Which kind of speaks to what we talked about earlier, which is just kind of the overall tone and setting a tone. And we'll see if these things maybe bear some fruit and maybe making things a little bit less contentious, at least in some areas of the General Assembly. I want to wrap up with what's happening now, which is a break for the legislature writ large while the Joint Finance Committee holds its initial budget hearings this month. What do we expect there? And is there any word on where the governor, Matt Meyer, stands on weighing in with his own budget?
Yeah, we've got a bit of an interesting situation going on because former Governor Carney has released his recommended budget, and that is what the Joint Finance Committee is currently working its numbers off of. But I asked Matt Meyer what his plans are, when he plans to release his recommended budget at his inauguration, and he said in early March. So we've still got roughly about a month before his expected budget is coming out. But right now, what the hearings are for state departments to come forward and basically make their request for how much money they would like. And, you know, this is the normal process, and again, it'll kind of shift depending on what Meyer also requests later, although he did say publicly that he plans to keep it close to Carney's. So as far as how much the numbers will vary, we're not necessarily sure. But another point that's important here is how much money we're getting from the federal government, which has been in limbo considering President Trump has halted that funding. That has now been reversed. But there's still a lot of question about how much money we'll be getting, could be getting less regardless, especially nonprofit funding, et cetera. So we're really just kind of at a point where we're not sure exactly how much money sits in our budget because we're not sure, you know, we cannot rely on the same federal funding sources that we always have. And not to mention, unfortunately, Delaware's budget trajectory does not look great. We're looking at about maybe 1% revenue growth next year, and Meyer's administration is potentially expected to see a dip, which is not necessarily uncommon, but it's just another factor that he has to take into consideration.
Yeah, a lot of uncertainty there in the next DFACT numbers on revenue projections will come out in March. So March is going to be a big time where those new numbers come out. We'll be through these first budget hearings, and presumably Governor Meyer will have his budget. Perhaps where that's where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, and we just have some large ticket items coming up. I mean, reworking a public education funding formula, that's going to take a lot of money. We've talked a lot about making healthcare more affordable, incentivizing that, a medical school, et cetera. I mean, these are all going to cost money, right? So where will the money come from? We'll have to see.
Thanks to Delaware Public Media political reporter Sarah Petrowich for joining us on The Green this week. And stay with us. Arts Playlist is next, with a look at the Rehoboth Art League's latest exhibition, showcasing rarely seen artwork from a collection of more than 1,000 pieces. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media.